Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked up Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur is going to commence in the middle of a discussion that was started toward the end of the previous shiur. We had seen a series of korbonos, or Beis Hamikdash activities. We saw Tomid, the Neros, and Ktores, which were featured in diamonds at the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis. They were a series of things, of practices, that the Pasuk uses the term Bein Ho'arbayim in reference to them. And as opposed to the Korban Pesach, which we saw was understood by Rabbi Yeshua as to refer to the time of Yud Aleph Nisan, the entire daytime of Yud Aleph Nisan is called Bein Ho'arbayim, and we explained that meant between two evenings. Such is not the case with regard to the term Bein Ho'arbayim as is applied to the Tomid, the Neros, nor the Ketores. The question that was dealt with most recently was the issue of the Ketores. We had actually, to be more accurate, with regard to the previous sukkah, we saw Bein Ho'arbayim, as we just mentioned, being used in the context, or being used as meaning something other than between two evenings. The question then is, what is the use of the word Ketores, the use of the word Bein Ho'arbayim in those circumstances? The Gemara at the very top of Yud Beis mentions that by the Korban Pesach you have the word Bo'erev. And if you have the word Bo'erev, how can that mean, how can the Korban Pesach associated with the term Bo'erev be offered all day, when Bo'erev would imply something in terms of the afternoon? The Gemara answered that the term Bo'erev by the Korban Pesach is designed to tell me offer it later than you would offer the Tomid. The question is, why would you say that? If the Korban Pesach time, according to Rabbi Yeshua, began already from the morning, why would the Korban Pesach later in the day, if it encountered the Tomid Shebein Arbayim, that you would offer the Pesach after the Tomid Shebein Arbayim? So the Gemara says that's exactly the point of the Pasuk, that since in the context of the Korban Pesach you have the term Bein Ho'arbayim and Bo'erev, it is telling me offer it later than the Tomid Shel Bein Ho'arbayim, where the term Bein Ho'arbayim alone appears. Our Gemara, 5 lines from the top, today's shiur, begins with a question, Umi'iko midi, Ti'ilu shochit le mitzafra, Amris Zimnehu. Could it possibly be, or could there be anything, that if you would shech the Korban Pesach from the morning, you would say that's its correct time? V'chimoti bein ho'arbayim amris yu'uchar dover. And then later in the day, if you haven't offered the Pesach yet, and then being that you're later in the day, the time for the Tomid Shel Bein Ho'arbayim has arrived, the afternoon daily sacrifice, you then tell me, offer the afternoon daily sacrifice before the Pesach that you haven't offered yet. But the Pesach could have been offered already in the morning. Why now does the Tomid Shel Bein Ho'arbayim take precedence over the Pesach? So the Gemara answers, in that very situation could arise. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halocha Mispalel Shel Mincha, V'achakach Mispalel Shel Musofen. What the Gemara is doing is, it is showing us another example in Halacha where, though something started earlier than something else, when that something else arrives, it takes precedence over the item that started earlier. The case that the Gemara cites is the halacha concerning Tfilas Musaf with regards to Tfilas Mincha. Tfilas Musaf, the Musaf davening, is a prayer that can be done during the early morning as well. After one davens Shacharis, one can lapse right into Musaf. However, if one has not davened Musaf in the early morning and waited till the afternoon, the time period that the Mincha davening sets in, the halacha is that one has to daven first the Mincha davening and then the Musaf, even though the Musaf began earlier. So we have shown that there is a halachic precedence for this type of situation. The Gemara asks, Ubein ho'arbayim dechsiv gabi k'turis v'neirois lomali. After we have on the previous daf explained that Ubein ho'arbayim does not take on the meaning of between two evenings, and we had to offer explanations behind the presence of Ubein ho'arbayim. For example, when the Gemara presented the issue of the Neros, it said, is Ubein ho'arbayim going to suggest that Neros could be done all day? So the Gemara answered, no, well, we can't say that because there is another pasuk that tells me otherwise. So the question right now is, so then what does Ubein ho'arbayim teach me? And if we cannot answer this successfully, then we're going to run into trouble with the original explanation that Rav Hoshaya gave to explain this Gemara. Before we go further in the Gemara, it is important for us to correct a mistake that was made earlier when we mentioned that the Ubein ho'arbayim, that the whole day was kosher for the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach. We mistakenly mentioned Rabbi Yeshua as being the author of that idea. That is incorrect. It was Ben Becerra, as was interpreted by Rav Hoshaya. So just to repeat and correct our mistake, the idea that the whole day is kosher, is acceptable for offering the Korban Pesach, as is explained by the pasuk Ubein ho'arbayim, that idea is that of Ben Becerra, as is interpreted by Rav Hoshaya. The Gemara here asks a question, and as we already started introducing the question, we pointed out that Ubein ho'arbayim, being that up till now we've seen it doesn't mean, and the Ubein ho'arbayim in the context of Ketores and Neros doesn't mean between two evenings. So then what is the purpose of using the term Ubein ho'arbayim? And if we cannot give an alternative explanation, then this will cause a problem for the entire explanation that Rav Hoshaya gave in explaining Ben Becerra. We should also take note of the fact that we have a long question marking that accompanies this piece of Gemara. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. That means that all the lines opposite this marking form the question. So let us continue. Ubein ho'arbayim dechtiv gabi k'turis v'neros lomali. V'oid. And furthermore, we have a Tanaic source that serves to contradict the explanation given by Rav Hoshaya. Heshiv Rebbe Tachas Ben Becerra. Rebbe comes in to explain Shitas Ben Becerra, and he comes to answer Ledivrei Rabbi Yeshua. He comes to offer a response for Rabbi Yeshua, who said that a slaughtering of the Pesach in the morning of the 14th, according to Rabbi Yeshua, was as if it was done on the 13th. In other words, the morning of the 14th, according to Rabbi Yeshua, has no connection whatsoever to the time that's suitable for the Korban Pesach. So Rebbe answers that point of view. Rebbe assumes Ben Becerra's position. Let's read this line again. Heishiv Rebbe tachas Ben Becerra ledivrei Rebbe Yoshua loy. He, Rebbe, is arguing, countering Rebbe Yoshua. Im amris b'shloish asar, if you mention the 13th of Nisan as being a time inappropriate for the Korban Pesach, she'ein miktsasoi ro'i. No part of the 13th is fit to have the Pesach done lishmo. Tomar bar bosar she'miktsaso ro'i. Can you say the same thing about the 14th, where part of it is fit? So since part of it is fit, if a person were to shecht the Korban Pesach, even if it's on the morning of the 14th, if he were to do it lo lishmo, since part of the 14th, namely the afternoon, is the proper time, and hence if the Pesach were done shelo lishmo in the afternoon, it's certainly no good. If it's done in the morning of the 14th as well, if it's done shelo lishmo, it will be pasul. That was, of course, Ben Becerra's position, and here Rebbe is simply introducing that in the name of Ben Becerra. For our purposes, though, we are bringing this particular source in as a kasha on Rav Hoshaya's approach to the sukya. We have dashed underlined the word miktsaso. How is the 14th described? It's described as partially fit for the Korban Pesach. The Gemara goes on, V'im Esau, if it were so, like Rav Hoshaya explained, Kuloi Ro'ihu, the entire 14th is fit for the Korban Pesach. So with this, we conclude a question on Rav Hoshaya's interpretation of Ben Becerra. To restate that, whereas Rav Hoshaya described Ben Becerra as allowing the entire daytime hours of the 14th of Nisan to be used for slaughtering the Korban Pesach, we see that that interpretation is, that presentation of Ben Becerra is not accurate. Elo Amar Rabbi Yochanan. As you can see with our markings, we have another crown form. This was introduced on Daf Yud Aleph Omid Beis, where in our explanation, we pointed out already then that this helps to highlight the machlokas Rav Hoshaya versus Rabbi Yochanan. So let's see now Rabbi Yochanan's explanation. Elom Rabbi Yochanan, posel hoya ben Becerra bePesach sheshochtoi barbosor shachris bein lishmoi bein sheloi lishmoi. Rav Yochanan says that Ben Becerra will declare invalid a Korban Pesach shechted during the morning hours of the 14th of Nisan, whether you shechted it lishmo as a Korban Pesach or whether you shechted the Korban Pesach as if it were something else, namely shelo lishmo. Lishmo deboi bein arbayim. A Pesach done in the morning hours as a Pesach is no good because it has to be done bein arbayim in the afternoon. Sheloi lishmoi, if you shecht the Korban Pesach in the morning, shelo lishmo, it's also invalid, hoyu umiktsaso roi, since part of the 14th was fit for lishmo. Therefore, a shechita of the Pesach any time during the 14th, even though it may be in the morning, if done shelo lishmo, renders it invalid. We now have a question that lasts a few lines. Once again, you see our long question marking. We've also associated with this piece of Gemara a topic heading. You can see on the outside margin, we're calling this a tatnose, a subtopic. In truth, it could be described as a topic in and of itself, but since it's coming on the heels of the current discussion, and it's part of the current discussion, we're labeling it a subtopic, and we're also indicating that this goes till Omid Beis. In one word, it's called dichui. Dichui is a situation where a korban is in a state of being unfit to be brought as a korban. There are two situations of dichui that will come up in our discussion: a situation where something initially is unfit, or something that was fit once and became unfit in the course of time. Continuing now in the Gemara, Megadef Bo Rabbi Avo. Megadef is a very harsh expression, but for our purposes it means an intense question is raised. Rabbi Avo raises an intense question on Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Im Kain, if, as you are saying within Ben Becerra, that whether you offer it Lishmoi or you offer the Pesach Shaloi Lishmo on the 14th of Nisan in the morning, it is Pasul, then Im Kain, Pesach Kosher LeBen Becerra Hechi Mishkachas Law. How can you ever have a situation of a Pesach, kosher Korban Pesach, being offered in its right time? The Gemara elaborates. Ida afrisheho idna, if he set aside the animal on the 14th in the morning to be offered later on as a Korban Pesach, dichui meikorahu, it starts off as being unfit, namely, at the point of its separation or of its dedication, it's not fit. That's it. Once something is not fit, in this case it's set aside at a point in time that it's unfit to be brought, it's thereby cast out of the realm of acceptance. The E dafrishinu me esmoil, let us say he set it aside on the 13th of Nisan. At that time, it would have been fit to be slaughtered as a korban shelo lishmo, as long as you slaughtered it with a changed identity, as if you had dedicated it as a Pesach, but you slaughtered it as if it were a shlomim, for instance. So if you did that, nir'eh v'nidchehu, that's described as a case of it having been accepted, namely from yesterday it was nireh, it was appropriate. It was appropriate to have been brought. It would have been fit to be brought if brought shelo lishmo. But then, the 14th in the morning, if that animal is still around, if you set it aside on the 13th and it's still around the 14th in the morning, in anticipation of it being used later that day as a Korban Pesach. However, once you tell me that a shechita on the 14th of the morning, whether it's done lishmo or shelo lishmo, it's invalid, this animal that you set aside the 13th enters a realm of time during which it would be unacceptable. That's called nidche. So either way, how can you have a situation of a Korban Pesach being kosher, according to Rabbi Yochanan's approach to Ben Becerra? The Gemara goes on with three answers. You can see we have a series of triangles, which are, of course, a series indicator. Our marking key on the side under the heading Mivneh, the structural note, features the triangle. Tshuvos l'kushyos Rabbi Avo, answers to Rabbi Avo's question. Pesach kosher leben Becerra hechi mishkachas lo, a kosher acceptable Pesach, according to Ben Becerra, Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan, Hechi Mishkachas, according to Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation of Ben Becerra, how do you ever have it? Mosa Yochol Afrisha, when can he set one aside? When can he dedicate and set aside an animal as a Korban Pesach? If you're going to inevitably run into a situation of Dichui. Elo Amar Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo, who raised the question, is actually answering it now. He says, Tehei v'achar chatzos. This is the first triangle. You can have a kosher Pesach, according to Ben Becerra, if you set it aside in the afternoon after midday of the 14th. Well, if you set it aside, if its initial dedication takes place in the afternoon of the 14th, it's an appropriate time for it to be offered, and hence it doesn't encounter a situation of dichui. Abaye Omar, Abaye goes a little further and says, Afilu temo mitzafra. Even if you do set it aside in the morning hours of the 14th, that does not present a problem of dichui. And the reason for that is, Ein mechuser zman lebo bayom. It's not considered lacking in time if it's that very same day. In other words, even though during the morning hours it's not acceptable, but since during the same that same day time period, namely the afternoon of that morning, it will be acceptable. Therefore, it's not considered lacking, and therefore, it's not considered in a state of dichui. Rav Papa Omar afilu temo meurta. He goes even further. He says it could have been set aside even in the evening of the 14th, the evening leading up to the 14th. Generally speaking, Jewish law, the night is the beginning of the day. As the Pasuk says, Vayerev Vayivoker Yom Echad. First there's the evening, and then there's the daytime. So the evening that precedes a given day, if the daytime here is, we're talking about the daytime of the 14th, or the afternoon of the 14th is the time of the Korban Pesach, the evening before that is considered also appropriate. It's considered, as we just mentioned the expression before, it's not mechuser zman, it's not lacking in time. Even though, of course, you don't offer sacrifices at night, nevertheless, the nighttime before the day is not considered lacking. Let's read that again. Afilu teimo meurto, lailo ein mechuser zman. At this point, we have a long point indicator. The next few lines will be dwelling on this idea. We'll show you the source for this halacha, that lailo ein mechuser zman. Detani Reb Debei Rabbi Shmuel. The topic that we'll be dealing with now has to do with a Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema is an animal that is part of the current year's births of animals. One takes one-tenth, counts off one out of every 10 animals, and every 10th animal that's counted is then set aside as a Meiser Behema, which is a korban that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash. A korban is not fit to be offered as a korban until the animal is 8 days old. An animal that's set aside as a korban before that, the fifth day, fourth day, the day it's born, whatever you say, if it's before its eighth day, it's called mechuser zman. It's lacking in time. One is not supposed to dedicate animals in a state of mechuser zman, when they are inappropriate to be offered. With that in mind, we read the source, Leil Shmini, the evening of the eighth day since its birth, since the animal was born, Nichnas Ladir Lis Aser. The animal can be put through the corral. There's a narrow passageway through which the animals were counted. As we mentioned, any given year's animals' births, the person has a flock of sheep, so all the sheep that were born that year, he counts them through by passing them through a narrow passageway. And as they emerge, he counts them off, 1, 2, 3, etc., and every 10th animal is declared a Meiser Behema. Now, there's a rule that one does not do the counting. The counting, of course, results in it being dedicated. That's tantamount to its dedication. Once it's labeled 10th, the counting of in anticipation of Meiser Behema is not allowed to be done if the animal is mechuser zman, if it hasn't reached its appropriate time. What does this source say? That the night of the eighth day, the night that precedes the eighth day, is an appropriate time for it to be counted. That would show you that Laila Eino Mechuser Zman, that the nighttime before the given day, if during the given day it is suitable as a korban, so the nighttime is also considered within the acceptable time period. Of course, we just caution that it doesn't mean acceptable and as actually slaughtering it and doing the Avodah Zarah Beis HaMikdash, because that's governed by a different pasuk, which indicates that daytime hours are me'akev, are necessary for the offering of korbanos. However, as far as the dedication of the korban, we see from this source the nighttime is also appropriate, the nighttime before the day, that it becomes suitable. Hence, Lailo Eino Mechuser Zman. the Gemara continues, the Rebbe Avtariki. And as according to Rav Avtariki's teaching, the Rebbe Avtariki Rami, Rav Avtariki raises a seeming contradiction between two psukim, and the resolution of this contradiction will be the point we are making. Ksiv, on the one hand, the pasuk says, "V'hoyeshivas yomim tachas imoi," that an animal is to be kept by its mother for its first 7 days of life. In other words, during the first 7 days, it is not to be offered as a sacrifice. We can infer from this ha laila. However, once 7 days pass, the night after those 7 days, chazi, it becomes fit. Uksiv, there's another pasuk that says, miyom umiyom hashmini v'hola yeroseh. From the 8th day, from the yom hashmini onwards, it is fit to be brought as a korban. We would infer from that, ha laila, but the night of the shmini, the night that precedes the 8th day, loy chazi. It would be unfit, unacceptable. So we have to make up our minds, what is the status of that nighttime that precedes the 8th day? Ha ketzad, how do we resolve this? Laila likedusha, the yoim lahartso. The nighttime is suitable for it being dedicated, for its being sanctified as a korban. And the daytime is suitable for its being, the Yerotza means to be offered as a korban. Amalei Rabbi Zera Rabbi Avo. Lema Kosova Rabbi Yochanan Baalei Chaim Nidchim. Rabbi Zera is addressing specifically Rabbi Avo and saying to him, according to your approach in Rabbi Yochanan, how is a Korban Pesach ever kosher? So Rabbi Avo himself explained above that it can be kosher if it's set aside after Chatzos, after midday of the 14th. Had it been set aside earlier than that, it would have been cast away. It would have been rejected. It would have been nidche. We are describing a living animal that can, as a living animal, it can become nidche. This is an issue that comes up in different places in the Shas. And here, Rabbi Zera is suggesting to Rabbi Avo, based on Rabbi Avo's interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan, that the only way we can have kashrus is if the dedication of the animal takes place in the 14th afternoon. So he says, Lema Kosova Rabbi Yochanan, should we say that according to your understanding of Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan would hold Baalei Chayim Nidchim, that living animals, not just slaughtered animals, not just meat can be rendered unfit, but living animals can also be rendered unfit. Amar Le'in. So Rabbi Avol says, that's correct. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Here we are featuring Rabbi Yochanan himself. Behemo shel shnei shutfin. We're going to present a halacha concerning which we will see this idea that even living animals can be rendered nidchin. What's his example? An animal that was owned by partners. Hikdish chetzya, one of the partners dedicated his half to the Beis HaMikdash. V'chozar v'lokach chetzya, and the partner that dedicated his half of the animal, he went ahead and bought the other half from the other partner, v'hikdisha, and then dedicated that half as well. So you in effect have a person who dedicated an animal as a korban, but he dedicated in two stages. The result of this kind of dedication is as follows. Kedosha v'eino krevo. It is considered sanctified, therefore you wouldn't be able to use it for personal pleasure. However, it's not offered as a sacrifice. V'oise tmura u'tmuraso kayotze ba. since it's no longer owned by partners, it lends itself to becoming used as a tmura. Tmura is a situation where a person attempts to replicate the sanctity of an animal by reproducing the sanctity of an original sacrifice onto a common animal, a chulin animal. The halacha of tmura is such that only a privately owned animal, an individually owned animal, can be made tmura, whereby this replication of sanctity can take place. However, a jointly owned animal does not produce a tmura, or a tmura situation cannot be activated if it's a jointly owned animal. And if one does try to replicate this animal that was sanctified in two stages, utmurasa kayotze ba, the second animal, the chulin animal that you replicated this kedusha onto, it likewise cannot be offered. We mentioned that this animal that was sanctified in two stages by the individual who had originally owned it as a partner, who sanctified his half of the animal and then bought out the partner and sanctified the second half as well. It's holy, but it's eino krevo. Let's glance at Rashi at the bottom. The eino krevo, hoyel ubetchilas hekdesha lo nire lahakriv. Why is this animal unsuitable to be as an offering? Because in its original encounter with sanctification, it was not fit to be offered. The chetzya hoysa chulin. Don't forget, in its original sanctification, only half was sanctified. The other half was still chulin. It wasn't holy. And as such, it could not have been offered. The dochui meikorahu. It's therefore initially rejected. Its initial encounter with Kedusha was such that it was dahui, it was unfit to be offered as a sacrifice. Hilkoch eino kreva oid. Therefore, even though later on it becomes fully sanctified, it can no longer be offered. The tira, it is set out to graze until it develops a blemish, a mum, and it's then sold. The loikhin b'damea acheres, and the money that you acquire through its sale as a Balmum, then buy another korban that you will then offer as a proper sacrifice. What do we see from these halachas? And we've labeled them the different points, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. What do we see from these points? Ushma mino tlas. We can come to three conclusions, three halachic conclusions. Number one, shma mino bale chayim nidchin. Here we have an example of a living animal that is rendered unfit through halachic categorizing. In other words, we're not talking about an animal that's rendered unfit, a living animal that's rendered unfit because it developed a mum. That's obvious. But here we're talking about because of some type of status change, even though it's a living animal, it too can become rendered unfit. There's a certain assumption that we're making that for slaughtered items to become unfit, that's more likely, more common, more reasonable. If meat, for example, is left over, it becomes nosar, it can then no longer be eaten. If dam is left over and not sprinkled, it's nidche, it can no longer be used as an offering, a sprinkling on the Mizbeach. There is a certain level of chidush in saying that even a living animal can be rendered unfit through a status, some type of status change. Nevertheless, we are in fact saying that over here, that Bali Chaim Nidchin. Number two, Shma Mino, Dichui Meikora Have Dichui. Before we go further, we ought to note that through the markings, we've dashed underlined the Shma Mino number one, because that was the main point of bringing this into our discussion, to show that Balei Chayim Nidchin. A second point is, Dichui Meikora Havi Dichui, something that starts off as being unfit, is also considered Dichui, is considered rendered unfit. That itself is a discussion in other Gemaras. A major discussion is featured in Masechet Sukkah concerning Dichui Meikora, the more obvious form of dichui, as far as the halacha is concerned, is something that was actually once fit and then cast out of being fit, which we call nirev v'nidche. That's the more obvious form of dichui. Here, we're saying that even something that starts off in a state of dichui has no chance of becoming fit. And number three, ushmamino yesh dichui bedamim. We see here something that had a sanctification with regard to its money value, even though it doesn't have kedusha saguf, even though it has a lower form of holiness. There are things that are themselves kodesh. An animal that's set aside, that's dedicated as a sacrifice, the guf has kedusha saguf. The guf itself is offered as a sacrifice. That's called kedusha zakuf. That's a higher level of kedusha. Things that have monetary value that's viewed as sanctified, where the item itself is not holy, but the value of it is holy. For example, if someone dedicated his automobile to the Beis HaMikdash, the automobile is not offered as a sacrifice. However, the automobile's money value has sanctity, insofar as he would then sell the car and buy sacrifices with it, and if he sanctified his car as to the Beis HaMikdash, he would not be allowed to drive around in it anymore. That's called kedushas damim. In this sugya, in the illustration we just saw of an animal that was owned jointly, where one of the owners dedicated his half of the animal and then bought out the other partner and dedicated his half, and we're mentioning that initially it could not have been offered as a sacrifice because only half was sanctified. What sanctification level did it have then? It had kedushas damim. We see here that something that had kedushas damim is also subject to being nidche. Once again, one might have assumed that only something that is kedushas aguf, since it has such a high level of sanctity, it's subject to being rendered unfit. Something with a lower level of sanctity, one might have thought, is not subject to this rejection, this thing called dichui. Nevertheless, we're mechadesh over here, we're informing you that it can be nidche as well. Let's take a look at Rashi at the top for a fuller explanation. Yesh dichui b'damim. Yesh toras dichui b'kdushas damim. There is a concept of being rendered unfit in the realm of monetary or value sanctity, even though it doesn't have inherent sanctity, like our case, where he sanctified his half in the animal, at that point its sanctity was only with respect to its, if its value, he had only half of it as his holding, and sanctity was not fit to spread throughout the whole animal when he sanctified it, because he owned only half of it. Even so, even though it had only a value sanctity, the concept of dichui is relevant, and it remains unfit permanently. And we don't say the following. We don't say lo alim ukdishas damim lisol mishum dichui, that value sanctity doesn't have the necessary level to be rendered nidche. As we said, we don't say that, and rather kedushas damim does have dichui, is subject to being rendered unfit. Continuing in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the outside margin, the Nose, Shnei Dugmois Shel Dichui BeKorbanos. We will see two examples of Dichui in sacrifices. One, Hifrish Korban VeHemir Daso, a person set aside a Korban with an intention of bringing it, but before he ever brought the Korban, he decided to rebel against Judaism. He became a Mumar. As such, a Mumar is not allowed to bring korbanos, or more accurately, we do not accept the korbanos of a mumar. Another example of dichui, hifrish korban v'nishtate, A person set aside a korban, but before he ever brought it, he lost his mind. He became a shoyte. And the Gemara will say, utsrichi, and I need these two examples of dichui. Omar Ula, Omar Rav Yochanan, Ochal Chelev v'hifrish korban, v'heimir dosoi, v'heimir dos, v'chozar boi. A person set aside a korban. He had eaten chaylev. He had eaten forbidden fats of an animal, which is a chiyuv kores. And if he did so unwittingly, he would be chayev to bring a korban chatos. So he did that. He had eaten the chaylev, hifrish korban, set aside a korban chatos, v'heimir dos, then rebelled against the Torah, v'chozar bo, and then returned, the tshuva. We say, with regard to the korban, that once it's cast away from being acceptable, namely while he was a mumar, it remains that way. Itmar nami, Omar b'Yirmiya, Omar b'Avo, Omar b'Yochanan. Again, Rabbi Yochanan. We've indicated with our markings that Rabbi Yochanan is the featured opinion in these two halachas. You could see by the one where he was Hamir Dosoi, that was Rabbi Yochanan's speaking, and here too, number two, Rabbi Yochanan. What does he say? Ochal chelev v'hifrish korban v'nishtate v'chozer v'nishtafe. Person had eaten chelev, set aside a korban as is required, and then became a shoyte, and then became healthy again. That's chozer v'nishtafe. He became normal again. Hoyol v'nidche yidoche. Once the korban was in a state of being unfit, unacceptable, even though the owner gets better, the animal is not acceptable anymore to be brought as a korban. Utsrichi, we have a long marker over here. You can see a length marker. To the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a circled word tsrichi with a vertical dashed line. That indicates that all of the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line form this idea of why I need these two examples. These two examples of situations where the korban was in a state of dihui, and there was a subsequent acceptable stage reached, but the korban nevertheless remained unacceptable. The I Ashmeinu and Kamaisa, had we told you the din of dihui in the first case of Hamir Dosoi, Mishum Dehu Dochi Nafshe Biodayim. The reason it doesn't become acceptable again is because the state of dichui that he was in there was something chosen. He chose to rebel against the Torah. Aval Hocha, where he lost his mind, where he became a shoite, the memelo idchi, where it's becoming unfit was something that happened automatically. It wasn't a matter of choice. Kiyoshein domi, maybe we should parallel that to a case of someone who set aside a korban and then went to sleep. Of course, if that happened, then when he wakes up, the korban is still kosher. So maybe the individual's being in a state of shoite is as if he went to sleep. Therefore, it was important to teach not only the first case. It was important to teach the case of nishtate as well. V'yashmin and hocha, had we taught only the case of nishtate, where the animal remained nidche, even though the owner got better, mishum de'ein biyodo lachzor, because while in the state of shoita, he didn't even have an option of getting out of it. It was a forced state where there was no out, no way out of on his own volition. Aval hocha, in the case of Hamir Doso, the yesh biyodo lachzor, since even though he had rebelled, while in a state of rebellion, he could have made the choice to back out of that, to come back. And since the situation of Hamir Doso had a potential of solution while in that state, Emolo, maybe that's not considered as severe a case of dichui, and therefore when he does do tshuva, the animal maybe may return to being acceptable. Tzricha, therefore it was necessary to teach that case as well, that even though it was yesh biyado lachzor, the animal remains unacceptable. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah raises a question, it lasts a couple of lines. Ochal chelev, the hifrish korban, like we had cases before, a person ate chelev, set aside the necessary korban chatos, the hoiru bezdin shechelev mutter, and then bezdin issued an erroneous legal ruling, they issued a ruling that chalev is allowed. The chazru bohen, and then they retracted. They discovered their mistake. Mahu, what do we say about this situation? When this person had eaten chalev, he thought that let's put it this way, he ate chalev and then discovered that what he did was wrong and set aside a korban. However, the Beis Din issued a ruling that what he did wasn't even wrong. True, it was an erroneous ruling, but as far as the public was concerned, at that point in time, chalev was an allowed substance, and therefore the korban that he set aside would have been useless, would have been for no purpose. And then we saw the Beis Din discovered their mistake. Mahu, what do we say as far as this korban is concerned? Can it be brought after Beis Din retracts their ruling? It turns out that in fact the person had committed an offense. So can he bring the korban that he set aside initially? Mi havei dachui oi loi havei dichui. Is this considered a case of dichui or not? Omarlei hahu sabo. The question was raised by Rabbi Yirmiya, so hahu sabo answers Rabbi Yirmiya and says, ki posach Rabbi Yochanan b'dichuyin, when Rabbi Yochanan opens a lecture on the topic of dichuy, meha posach, he starts his lectures from this very case. Now there's a machlokas Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam in interpreting this Gemara, but we're going to follow Rashi's pshat for right now. Rashi says that Rabbi Yochanan would open up his lectures and explain that this case of Hifrish Korban V'horu Beis and Shechelev Mutter is a case of Dichui, that the Korban would be rendered unfit. My Taimo, why is the Korban considered unfit? Hasam, in the case of Hamir Doso, or the case of Nishtate, Gavro Idchi, Korban Lo Idchi, the person is considered unfit. The owner was unfit because either he rebelled against the Torah or he became incapable as a shoite. However, the animal itself, if it were to be brought by someone else, nothing. The animal, or as a korban, it still would have been a legitimate korban. And yet we say that in the case of Hamir Dosu Nishtate, where there's only one level of dichui, namely Gabra Idchi, it still is rendered unfit and cannot become acceptable later on. Ha-ha! In the case of Horu Beis Din, where the Beis Din issued their erroneous ruling, Korban Nami Idchi, not only is the person considered Nidche in the sense that it was viewed at that time that what he did wasn't even a sin, not only that, but the Korban as such is not fit for anyone. Namely, anyone who had eaten Chelev would not be Shayach to this Korban at that particular point, because the court ruled that Chelev was an allowed substance. So if in a case where just the Gavra is Idchi, the Korban is rendered unfit permanently, here where not only is the Gavra considered Idchi, but the Korban is considered Idchi as well, all the more so, it does not become fit afterwards. Omar Shimon ben Azai, the Kublani mipi shivim ushnayim zokein v'chulei. We saw that Shimon ben Azai introduced the idea of an oilo shelo lishma as being posel, and he quoted a tradition that he had in the name of 72, zokein. He used an unusual word. He used the word zokein in the singular when he had just mentioned there were 72 of these people. Loma li lemisno shivim ushnayim zokein. Should he not have used the more appropriate plural expression zikenim? Answer: de kulu bechado shaito havu kaimi. The reason for the use of the singular is that all of these men, the 72 people he was referring to, were all seated together in one session. They were together, time wise. There's another girsa that they were chadashitza, they were all of the same opinion. But either way, the use of the singular word was to show this sense of unity, whether it be in time or in terms of opinion. Loi hoisif ben azay elo ha'oilo. Ben Azai adds to the list of unacceptable korbonos when done shelo lishma, he adds only the oila, namely they have the Pesach and the Chatos, and according to Ben Azai, an oila as well. Before we go further in the Gemara, we want to take note of the geometric forms that are coming up. We have a nosei mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note combined. The diamonds here are nisyonos lahasbir maitaimo de Ben Azai tehoisif oila lepesach v'chatos. Why did Ben Azai add the ola to the pesach and chatos de shelo lishmo posel? That an inaccurate intent when offering it would render it posel. Omar Rav Huna, turning to the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna, Mai Taimo de Ben Azai. You'll notice we have a little one in the space to the right hand side of the Gemara that's in a diamond. If you skim down, you'll see a number 2. And at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, there in fact is a number 3. So we're trying to explain Ben Azai with these diamonded sections. So the Rav Huna offers an explanation, Mai Taimo de Ben Azai. The Pasuk says, Oila hu yisherech nichoch l'Hashem. He lishmo k'shero, shelo lishmo psula. Focusing on the word hu in the Pasuk, Oila hu, it would indicate that in offering it, one must have a correct, focused intent, focused on it being an Oila and not something else. The Gemara asks, well, Osham Nami, which the Osham Korban, which Ben Azai does not include in the group of lo lishmo puzzle things, why not? Osham Nami ksiv be hu. The word hu appears in the context of a Korban Osham. The Gemara answers, hahu la'achar aktoros emurim hu dichtiv. The appearance of the word hu, which was of a limiting nature in the case of the Ola, when you're dealing with the Osham, it appears in the Pasuk after the offering of its innards. And we've explained on previous occasion the issue of offering the innards themselves of an Osham, or of any Korban for that matter, is not me'akev, it's something that's expendable in the processing of a Korban. In the sense, when we mention expendable, it means that if the Emurim are lost for whatever reason, or cannot be offered for whatever reason, the Korban remains kosher. So the appearance of the restrictive word hu is in the context of an element of the Korban that itself is not restrictive, or is not a binding issue. Therefore, lo lishma by the Osham does not passel it, doesn't render it unfit. The Gemara asks, Hai nami, in the case of the Ola, the achar haktoras emurim hu dichtiv, the word hu, in the case of the Ola, is also written in the context of the following the offering of the emurim. So the Gemara answers, as far as an Ola is concerned, tre hu ksivi, the word hu appears on two occasions. The Gemara asks, Gabi osham nami tre hu ksivi. In the case of the Osham, you also have two of these words, two times the word hu appears. So why is there a distinction between an ola and an osham, where you say by the ola lo lishmo would be possible, and by the osham lo lishmo is acceptable? Ela, number 2, Ben Azai, bekal v'chomer ma'isila. Ben Azai arrives at his conclusion concerning the ola lo lishmo possible through a kal v'chomer logic, as follows. We have in our markings a triangle whose position will be flipping around, flipping back and forth. The Mivneh note on the outside margin indicates Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. We have, with the triangle point facing up, we have a Kal V'chomer, and with the point facing down, Pircha, the undoing of that logic. So Ben Azai argues a Kal V'chomer. Uma Chatos She'eno Kolil. Mind you, a korban chatos, which is not completely consumed on the mizbeach. Only part of the animal, the innards, are put on the fire. The rest of the meat is eaten by the kohanim. Shochto shelo lishmo psula. And yet, if it's slaughtered with an inaccurate mindset, a non-focused mindset on its identity, namely, it's shechted with something else in mind, it is rendered unfit. The oila korban, which is completely consumed on the fire, which would indicate it has a certain level of higher significance. So as such, all the more so would an inaccurate mindset render it unfit. So Ben Azai is making a kal v'chomer from a korban chatos to prove that lo lishma by an ola would certainly render it unfit. The Gemara asks, though, ma lechatos shekein mechaperes? How can you prove ola from a chatos? A chatos is a korban designed for atonement. It could be because of that feature of the korban chatos, if it's done lo lishma, it's rendered unfit. However, a korban ola, which is not designed for kapara, maybe if it's done lo lishma, it still is kosher. So Ben Azai would respond, Pesach yochiach. We can allow the korban Pesach to prove the point. The Pesach is not completely burnt, and the Pesach is also not mechaper. Let's emphasize or focus our point here. The Pesach, which is unlike the Chatos in the sense that it's not mechaper, and still it's posel shelo lishmo. The Gemara responds, Ma le Pesach, I can't learn from Pesach to a korban ola that lo lishmo will be posel. Ma le Pesach shekein zmano kavua, it has a fixed date, 14th of Nisan, and being that it has a fixed date, maybe that's the reason why if done shelo lishmo, it would be posel. And ola doesn't have a fixed calendar date for its being offered. Well, to that we respond, chatos tochiach. Let the chatos prove the point. Now, the chatos does not have a fixed time, and yet if it's done shelo lishmo, it's unfit. So let me say the same thing by an ola. That would be Ben Azai's argument. The chazar hadin, however, the logic continues to revolve. Namely, if you say chatos tochiach, I would then come back and argue that I can't prove from chatos because it's mechaper. That's what we mean by a revolving logic. Lo ro'izeh kiro'izeh, v'lo ro'izeh kiro'izeh. The proof that I bring from one is not like the proof that I bring from the other. Namely, the proof that I tried to bring from the chatos is not like the proof that I tried to bring from the Pesach. And we can, however, say, Hatzar Hashova Shebohen, the common denominator between these two elements, the Pesach and the Chatos, Shehen Kodshim, they are sanctified animals, the Shochton Shelo Lishmo Posel, and if slaughtered with an inaccurate mindset, they are posel, the Pesach and the Chatos are unfit. Afani Ovi Oilo Shi Kodshim, I will include, there by the same token, a Korban Ola, which is Kodshim, which is sanctified, v'shochto shelo lishmo, and if slaughtered with the incorrect mindset, psula, it too will be rendered unfit. To this, the Gemara responds, ma lehatzar asher shebahen, shekein yesh bohen tzad kores. How can you try to prove from a common denominator between a Pesach and a Chatas to an Ola? The Pesach and Chatas have a certain feature of stringency, of strictness, that they have, which is not the case by an Ola. And that's called tzad kores. A korban Pesach, if one does not bring it, he will be chayav the kores penalty. A korban chatos is brought by someone who violated a kores type sin, a sin punishable by kores. So how can Ben Azai bring proof to ola lo lishma from a tzana shove between Pesach and chatos? The Gemara and Ben Azai, the response to that is, Tzad Kores Lo Porech. He doesn't view that quality of the Kores commonality as grounds for rejecting the Tzad HaShoveh. And therefore, he does learn from the Tzad HaShoveh of Pesach and Chatos to Ola. The Gemara asks concerning Ben Azai, Osham Nami Laisi, why does Ben Azai not include in his list of korbanos don shelo lishma the korban osham as well? So far, all Ben Azai we said adds simply the ola. In addition to Pesach and Chatos, Ben Azai says an ola also, if done lo lishma, is possible. Why does he not add an osham as well? Answer: osham porech. As far as the osham, there is what to raise as a question when trying to learn Osham from Pesach and Chatos. Ma lehatzar hashava shebohen sheken yeshnon betzibur kebiyochid. The nature of Chatos and Pesach are that they are considered public sacrifices. That description does not apply to an Osham. An Osham has no association with the public. An Osham is brought only by private individuals. The E boyesema, tzad kores nami porech. Another approach the Gemara is taking to understanding Ben Azai's shita, Ben Azai who said that an ola lo lishma is posel, we thought that he would learn that from the common denominator, the tzad hashavah, from a chatos and pesach, and learn just like they lo lishma are posel and ola as well, but we might ask that, well, you can't learn from Chatos and Pesach because they have a Kores element associated with them, which is not the case by an Ola. So if that be the case, if Tzad Kores Nami Porach, if we do raise the Kores question, then how does Ben Azai learn that an Ola is Posel Shelo Lishmo? A third approach. Uben Azai Gemora Gomir Law. Ben Azai had an oral tradition that an Ola Shelo Lishmo is Pasul. The Ha Dekama Rav Huna Kal V'Chomer, and that which Rav Huna suggested by saying in stage 2 that it was a Kal V'Chomer, Lo Omra Elo L'Chadei Bo Talmidov. He introduced the idea or mentioned throughout the term Kal V'Chomer only to sharpen the students, to see if they were on their toes, and that they would raise the necessary objections to the Kal V'Chomer, as we saw originally in the Gemara. But the bottom line is, as far as the true basis of Ben Azai's position that an Ola Shelo Lishmo is Posel, that's a function of an oral tradition that he had, and not the function of a limud of a Kal V'Chomer. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.